Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Good to see you today.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Good. Ready and raring to go.
Happy Monday.
Talk about important issues of the day. Of course, that's a matter of opinion. You know, sometimes the top story of the day might be political shenanigans that we'll have less interest in. But this, obviously, is important. It has to do with foreign policy. But it's interesting information because what has been suspected for a long time has actually been revealed recently about which countries are doing what. But the one article that caught our attention was from Zero Hedge, and it had to do with NATO. You know, NATO is that body that protects us from the Soviets ever invading Europe. And, you know, after that threat ended, they had to find a just cause for their existence. So that, of course, was to rule the Middle East and get the NATO to be complicit with what we do, whether it's Afghanistan or Ukraine or wherever. But the article on Zero Hedge, the title tells us a whole lot. It says, NATO general threatens consequences for Turkey buying Russian air defense system. How sinister can it be? And I understand the real goal was to get the American version of it, even if it did cost a little bit of money. But that's not the issue. But the reason why this strikes me is I can understand our government protecting profits for some corporations, especially weapons manufacturers. Mm-hmm. But this is NATO. NATO's complaining and threatens consequences for buying Russian equipment and not buying U.S. equipment. So there's a lot of things going on here, especially the fix in a way that Turkey finds itself. You know, they've been sort of trying to balance themselves, but here Turkey's pretty unhappy with all this, and obviously there's some political significance for this too.
Yeah, and it is significant. It's obviously a very public thing that Turkey looks to Russia for it's the S-400 system that they have not finalized, but they've signed an early agreement with Russia. It's expected to cost $2.5 billion, so it's a little bit of change that they have. But the issue really is about, at least from NATO's perspective, at least General Petro Pavel, who's the chairman of NATO's military committee, it talks about that they have the authority, they have the sovereignty to purchase whatever system they want, but they're not going to be part of the integrated air defense system of NATO if they do it. And the quote he said was, they're sovereign in acquisition of defense equipment, but they're also sovereign in facing the consequences of their decisions. So that's a veiled threat, I think.
And the way things are evolving in this region right now and in Syria, Turkey's unhappy now with the U.S. and Europe. And, of course, this weapons thing has gotten their attention. But in some ways, I just wonder whether we could categorize this as an unintended consequence because, you know, not too many years ago, Turkey was quite enthusiastic of joining NATO, they're a member of NATO, and being a participant in the movement, Assad has to go. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're on the outs with that same group, and now they're becoming more aligned with Russia, diplomatically and now financially. So it's a consequence that probably not too many predicted, exactly what would happen. But of course, in these situations, you can expect unintended consequences. And I think this is what's happening. But I don't know exactly what Turkey's response is going to be, because I doubt if they're going to cancel that order if they're able to get it. And that may drive even more conflict between Turkey and NATO. It remains to be seen, but still it's very interesting and politically important information.
Yeah, I think these are the undercurrents, really, of the decision that you pointed out. You know, Turkey was an enthusiastic supporter of the idea of Assad must go. And that was if you remember, that was a shift for the Erdogan government, because his initial foreign policy was no problems with neighbors. That was what he was founded on, what he was elected on. And then he did a switch and decided to be in favor of regime change in Syria. But that shift really occurred, I think, earlier this year. Part of it was when Russia declared these no-conflict, deconfliction zones, which really were key to the victory against ISIS and al-Qaeda. But I think the other thing that the Turks saw happening, which has also shifted them politically, because they were part of the deconfliction zones, but they also saw that essentially Washington ran out of fighters. There were no moderates in Syria for the U.S. to back. It was all a facade. And at the end of the day, the only people Washington could get to take up arms were the Kurds. And the last thing the Turks want is for the Kurds to be well-trained and well-armed on their border. And I think that's what significantly pushed the shift more toward Russia and Iran, which was a pretty clever thing because ultimately they're victorious, it appears, at least in Syria.
You know, we have talked about, and the evidence has been out there, and we've made the assumption that our government plus others had actually been helping, you know, the terrorists because they were going to be against Assad. And, of course, there's always been denial, and that's terrible, and, you know, and you hear conflicting reports. But then there was a report just recently came out of Carter. Official gave a report, and he came clean on this. You know, the assumptions were made, and we knew pretty much what was happening, but he came out and said, that's exactly what happened. It wasn't at the end. It wasn't a last-minute decision. It was the decision to go after Assad. They went and started supporting it, and his claim, and for some reason I sort of believe this person, this Qatari official, and there were four countries that were funneling aid to radicals to do their battle against Assad, thinking, well, you know, and we've done that before in Afghanistan, probably continue to do that around the world. But this report said that Saudi Arabia was very much involved. The U.S. was very much involved. Carter, who he was representing, they said we were involved too. And of course, Turkey was involved. So it's interesting. Turkey was there moving that along. But now Turkey's sort of in between the two and sort of separating himself from that. But obviously, Turkey or Jordan, although they don't have military might that they move in there, they were very complicit and cooperative and help do the planning. And the two countries not mentioned in that was directly involved, but they might have been cheerleaders, and that's for speculation, but a good speculation, and that is Israel and Iran was obviously, really, I don't think they're bashful about saying that they support, Assad getting out of there. I mean, that is a big desire on their part. And of course, the other monkey wrench you've already mentioned, that's where the Kurds are going to fit in here. And that will have to be sorted out as well.
And this confession is fascinating because he didn't have an attack of conscience. And this just wasn't any official. This was a former prime minister, Hamad bin Yassim bin Jaber Al Thani, long
Pretty
name. But long name, I think, means he's probably important. Former prime minister, he was also in charge of Syria operations on behalf of his country, Qatar, until 2013. So he was in the thick of it. And as I said, this wasn't an attack of conscience. Essentially, you know, there's been a big blow-up between Saudi Arabia and its allies and Qatar. And they're at each other's throats. The U.S. initially took Qatar's side, or took the Saudi side against Qatar and the back and forth. So this is the context of this so-called confession. And what he's pointing out, he said, look, don't signal us out for being responsible for terrorism, U.S. and Saudi and all you guys, because guess what? I was in charge of it, and here's what happened. All four of us did it from the beginning, from 2011. We're all guilty, so let's stop pointing fingers. So I think you're right. That would make me suspect that this is probably a pretty honest confession on his part.
You know, to us, this is important information, but I'm just wondering, in the midst of tax reform going through Congress right now and some other political things going on, I don't imagine a lot of people are going to be mentioning this or talking about it. I don't think there's going to be a looking into this. Were we really supporters of the terrorists that we were telling the country and the world that we have to stop terrorism? And, of course, the president was elected with a very, very strong position against terrorism. So I think it would surprise a lot of Americans, but we don't have the majority of Americans watching our show yet. So they might not hear this, but it'd be interesting to see if anybody picks it up. It's too bad that we don't have more allies, from the progressives as well as the constitutionalists and the libertarians to say, hey, look, this is important information. They've distorted this. They've lied to us. And this is what is really happening, and it is official. And at the same time, you know, we're supposed to pick sides between Qatar and Saudi Arabia, who's the biggest violator of civil rights and who's the biggest supporter of the radicals. You know, it's such distortion that we have to try to figure out.
You know, you're so right, because you think something like this, this is a shocking confession, a shocking interview. Where is the mainstream media? You could see almost, where's the headline in Washington Post? You know, shock story. You know, Qatar admits that we're all involved in it. You're not seeing it anywhere. You know, why are they not interested in the story?
Well, I think they want to cover up stories that may put them in a bad light. That's their goal. That's their job. And that might be why the headline said NATO's complaining, not United States. Oh, United States complaining. So, well, why are you complaining? Well, they're our military industrial complex. They've just lost a good contract. What did you say, $200 billion?
Two and a half billion.
Yeah, they just lost a good contract, and they've lost some business. But it's not the United States saying this, but I work on the assumption that we own NATO, and we pay NATO. We always fight NATO's battle. We always get support from NATO countries to rubber stamp what we do and make it look like it's unified. But I think we own NATO just as we can get resolutions passed at the United Nations because we give the most money. So I think this is pretty important. And it's a shame that more people can't find out about this because it's more than just NATO. It's United States foreign policy. And if NATO was doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing, it doesn't keep us from still having a foreign policy as a sovereign nation and for Congress to be looking at when we get engaged. Now, there talking about serious debate on authority to use military force, a new authority.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you're very optimistic about that, but I am not optimistic that their new one is going to be any better. Matter of fact, you know, when you think of the War Power Resolution 1972, it made things worse. It made it easier to go to war. So when they have this, and right now, the real evil is they just ignore all law. So it would be good to address it. So if they come up and say, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to pass a new law and allow all this mischief to happen, that's not much help. They don't really say, well, how are we supposed to do it? Oh, yeah, we did get some instructions on this. We're supposed to get permission from the Congress and from the people with a declaration. So that is the case. Sometimes I'm convinced that they work on the assumption the president can do anything they want unless there's a prohibition, which is exactly the opposite. They can't do anything unless they get permission. So I think, you know, the next law that is supposed to limit and restrain the use of military force isn't going to solve this problem. There's too many angles going on. And I mean, even we didn't report correctly how many countries we were in Africa. It was 53 or something. And it's and the members of the Senate amazingly admitted we didn't know that.
Yeah.
And they were on the national security committee.
You know, Turkey is in a unique position because it sort of straddles the West and the East, you know, and I think it's made pretty good use of this in the past. And I think this might be another example of them being quite clever. And I suspect, and maybe I'm going out on a limb, I suspect they may not finalize the deal for the S-400s. But I think they're trying to send a very clear message to Washington. And I think we have a graphic here because their official news agency put out a tweet talking about how wonderful the S-400s are. And if you scroll down, you can see they're showing how great the S-400s are against opponents. And if you go down toward the planes, these are all American planes. So the official Turkish government press agency is saying, gosh, these S-400s are great against our allies' airplanes. You know, so if that's not a pointed message to Washington about Washington's policy in the Middle East, I don't know what is.
You know, sometimes when they say we have to protect the secrecy of government to protect it from the enemy getting it, and usually what they're thinking about, don't let the American people know what we're doing. And there's a little bit of shenanigans going on there. But I don't think our foreign policy is going to change here soon. It should. And that's what we're going to continue to work on, because it makes no sense. There's too many unintended consequences, too much blowback, too much money spent, too much danger in the world. And if you want to pick and choose the most dangerous spot, obviously North Korea remains still a very dangerous spot. But all these activities, whether it's Africa, in the Middle East, Ukraine, they're all potentially explosive. And this, of course, we welcome this information because it confirms what many others were saying, that we're reputable, but it wasn't official enough. But this is official, and we were very much involved. It was a bad policy, and unfortunately, Assad have to go policy doesn't look like it's been buried. You know, already we hear rumbles about the administration now talking about, well, maybe we ought to go back to 2011. Maybe Assad really has to go.
Exactly. This is, and you wrote about this in your column this week, and it's up on our website. I hope everyone reads it. But here we are back to Tillerson said just last week that we're just looking for ways to get him out. You know, so here we, you know, ISIS is gone, and we can't just go home. You know, but if I can conclude on one more thing, because I do want to remind our viewers that Tuesday night at midnight, the offer to get Dr. Paul's book. For a donation to the Ron Paul Institute, help us support the show and support the Institute. Have a book signed to you, sent to you from our recently acquired new few boxes of books because they've been going so fast. Tuesday night at midnight is the deadline. It's easy to do it. Here are the directions. If you need more information, ronpaulinstitute.org website. Get Ron Paul's book on the Revolution at 10.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank our audience for joining us today. And if I could quickly summary what I think is important here, is that we have information that we have suspected all along was true, and that is that we are way too deep in becoming allies with some of the radicals that we declare that the whole country has to be dedicated to rooting out all jihadists and all radicals at the same time. They're our allies. And this comes from authentic information, and it was certainly clear-cut at the beginning of the war in Syria. So what we need is more truth, more exposure for the American people to make a better decision. And if the subject comes up on the House floor ever or in the Senate about renewing the authority to use military force, hopefully some of this will come out in the debate. But so far, we do not have a lot of active allies in Washington. We hope we can activate them, because our position isn't all that complicated when it comes to foreign policy. Like I've said many times, why don't we just start by looking at our guidelines put in our Constitution? That would help us a whole lot. I believe that would move us toward peace and prosperity quicker than anything else. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.